Do you ever think you interviewed well for a job whenever you went on a job interview? Do you? I always thought I was a terrible interview, but once I was hired, they saw that I could do the job. And I think it's the same thing when it comes to my dating life. I'm not so good at the interview. You know what I'm saying? Not so well. But after then, you know, it's like, hey, he's not a bad guy. And I think it's the same thing sometimes when it comes to job searches. And we're joined now by Hilke Shellman, a journalism professor at NYU and the author of the book, The Algorithm, How AI Decides Who Gets Hired, Monitored, Promoted, and Fired, and Why We Need to Fight Back Now. And the New York Times said it was one of the best 5 books on AI to read now. So whether we like AI or not, it's part of our everyday lives. And with that, we welcome in Hilke Shellman. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. I got to ask, you know, we're going to go slow here because we don't want to hurt ourselves. And a lot of people know of AI. They might not really know what it is. Let's start, I guess, with what led you to write the book. And then we'll move on from there about what AI is and so forth.
Yeah, totally. So it started actually like 8 years ago. I was at a conference of consumer lawyers in Washington, D.C. that had nothing to do with AI or big data, probably still doesn't. But I needed a ride to the train station. I caught myself a Lyft. I didn't have a car. Got in the back seat and I asked the driver how his day was. And he told me he had a weird day. And I had never had a driver respond to that. And, you know, I'm a journalist. So I was like, oh, yeah, what happened? He's like,
you smelled the story, didn't you? You smelled
the robot.
Story.
Yes. Yeah. I totally did. And he's like, I had a job interview with the robot. And I was like, what? I had never heard of that. So he told me he had applied as a baggage handler at a local airport. And that day he got a call. So it wasn't a robot. It's probably a pre-recorded interview. But to him, it felt like a robot asking him, like, you know, why do you want this job? Mm-hmm. What are your strengths and weaknesses? And so I got a signal. And a few months later, I went to a conference and somebody talked about sort of how AI is creeping into the workforce and changing hiring. And I was like, I'd never heard of it. And then I started, you know, looking at the companies. And at one of the conferences, I saw how, the company was showing how they were like checking facial expressions and intonation of voices. And first I was like, oh, who knew that facial expressions are predictive in job interviews, predictive how good you are at a job. And little did I know at the time that it has nothing, you know, there's no science what facial expressions you need at a job interview to predict how good you'll be at the job. But I sort of figured out pretty quickly that AI was already pretty prevalent and now is very, very prevalent in your job search.
So first off, let's begin, I guess, with what is AI and how does it manifest itself in interviewing somebody or in evaluating somebody for a job?
Yeah. You see it, I would say AI is generally, or algorithms, they're sort of like machine learning tools where you put some data into the tool and it spits out results. And the way we see this in hiring is usually you get a bunch of candidates, and you throw it into the software, and then it spits out a ranking, right? Like, so what we've seen since the dawn of job platforms like LinkedIn, Monster, Indeed, all of those, it's so easy to apply for people, and that is great. It democratizes hiring, right? But also the companies are overwhelmed. They get thousands, and now with generative AI, they get even more job applications. So for some jobs, they get thousands of applications. So what are they going to do? They want an algorithm or AI to figure out who are the best people, rank the best people, so I don't have to look through thousands of resumes. So all the large job platforms use AI. We know that probably all Fortune 500 companies that now use AI along the hiring funnel. So resume screening, we see it in job interviews. Like you have one-way video interviews, one-way audio interviews. Now you have even video avatars doing the interviewing. Some companies ask people to take assessments. Some people are asked to play games. We see it in background checks before you get, because before you sign the final offer. We use AI there, so it's all what we call like the hiring funnel that we see that we see AI being used.
So somebody texted in and said, "When we have an Oakwinard Jeweler talk and text line where I like to get the audience involved at 504-260-1870, please no texting and driving." And they say, "Call me dumb, but I don't even know what an algorithm is. Perhaps you could explain that."
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, algorithm is anything where you have, like, sort of a pre-described formula. So even, like, honestly, a cooking recipe is kind of an algorithm because it lays out, do this, do that, do that. And you get a result. You get, like, you know, a cake or, you know, or cook, or food. So an algorithm is just that. But I think what we now have is we have algorithms that we call, you know, the unsupervised learning. So it used to be where computer programmers sit down and they say, like, well, if somebody has this skill, then put them on the yes pile. Mm-hmm. But what we now have is we give the tool training data and say, like, look, here are all the resumes of an account of all our accountants. Algorithm, you figure out with a statistical analysis what these people have in common. And then every new resume that comes in gets compared to that, right? Is this, like, applicants, are they similar to the people that we already have or are they not? And I think that's where some of the problems that I have uncovered lie, is like we have this unsupervised learning where we just let the algorithm sort of do their job, but we don't look over it. So, for example, in some of the resume process, so this is at the very beginning, you submit your resume, the hiring manager is overwhelmed, they get 1,000 resumes, they ask an algorithm, hey, algorithm, figure out who are the best candidates. So some of the algorithms figured out that if you had the name Thomas, you got more points. If you had the words Canada and Syria on your resume, you got more points. So that's problematic because, you know, Thomas, the name Thomas doesn't qualify you for anything.
Well, let's not be silly.
You want people...
I'm just kidding. Go ahead, though.
Well,
seriously.
But, you know, the same with, like, Canada and Syria, right? Like, where you're from or where you've lived shouldn't make any difference in hiring, right? Like, so I think the problem is, like, if we have these unsupervised models, the tool probably did what it does best. In a pile of resumes, it did a statistical analysis, and apparently in this one job, there were lots of Thomases. So it figured out this is significant, must give people who have the word Thomas on their resume more points.
Wait, so hang on. Let me jump in for a second.
Yeah.
So I was under the impression that somebody had programmed this thing to look for people, for whatever reason, they had, and
no.
I think this is the crux of it, they had determined that, well, we want somebody named Thomas, we want somebody from Canada, we want somebody from Syria, but you're saying, no, what happened is this unsupervised algorithm took it upon itself to infer this from that when, in fact, it's not true?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, okay. Yeah. So what we do today is, like, we don't tell the algorithm, look for people with this skill. We just say, hey, here are all the resumes of people who are currently in the job. Figure out what they all have in common. So the algorithm does a statistical analysis. That's basically what a lot of machine learning is. And it probably finds out that, like, I don't know, if it's a tech company and has a lot of men, maybe, you know, there's lots of Thomases. Who knew? Mm-hmm. And then it looks for that. So any human would say, hey, we know that first names have nothing to do with your qualifications, so we shouldn't look for that, right? Like, the places, we shouldn't look for that. But this is unsupervised learning, or sometimes we describe it as a black box, right? We just feed the data to the algorithm and ask the algorithms to figure it out themselves, that's where the problems start coming in. Another example, you know, there were a lot of hobbies that, like, were predictive of success. So if you had, like, words like football and baseball on your resume, you got more points. Mm-hmm. If you had the word, in one instance, the word softball on there, you got fewer points. So that might be actually gender discrimination, mm-hmm. right? Because more women play softball. So that's sort of the problem. Like, a hiring manager would know, I'm not going to look at hobbies because they have nothing to do with this account job or whatever, right? I don't know. You know, some people put hobbies on there, bless their heart. But an algorithm doesn't know what is right or wrong. What are the things we should be looking for in a job application? So I think that's where we see some of these problems come in that we talk about. We call them bias proxies that come in if you let the machines run rampant without checking. And I think that's sort of what worries me with a lot of this technology, that the AI developers, the companies that build these AI tools, these algorithms to scan resumes, they often themselves don't know what is it exactly that the algorithm says on a resume makes you should be on the yes pile or not. And then the companies that use the algorithms don't know either, because the people that built that tool didn't even know. And then job applicants don't know anything, right? Like, they're totally in the dark. They apply to all these jobs, get rejections, and they have no idea. And everyone I've ever talked to thought, obviously, they would be rejected because they're not qualified. But that might not always be the case. And in fact, we know from surveys of sort of leadership and companies who were asked, if your company uses AI tools, does your AI tool reject qualified candidates? And almost 90% said yes. They know themselves that their tools aren't working as, you know, as well as they're being advertised. Let's put it that way.
So does the AI, do the algorithms exaggerate the bias that already exists or create bias?
Both of these things. So if you have a biased data set, meaning, you know, if you have a company that is like, you know, maybe more white male, older male driven, and you only take those resumes and put it into the tool, it might replicate and find those things that like make these older white males distinguishable. And maybe other people have different things on their resume and it wouldn't find, and it would reject those people, right? Because they're not part of the statistical importance of what an algorithm finds. So yes, if you have biased data that goes in, biased data comes out. But then on top of that, like I would say that like finding the word Thomas or looking at hobbies, like that's like bias created by the algorithm in a way that human wouldn't do. So we have those two problems that sort of come together in these tools. And unfortunately, you know, I only know this because I talk to employment lawyers who sometimes get called in to test these tools. If maybe a company figures out something is going wrong here, let me bring somebody in. But most of the time, there's no routine checking to find those things. And that's what worries me. I'm actually like not against technology at all. I use AI all the time in my work. But I do think when it's about high risk decisions like hiring, you know, it matters. I mean, at least it matters to me if I get a job or not. Like, I'm very nervous before a job interview because it could change my life. And I could put food on the table and put a roof over my head and my kid's head. So that's really important to me. We got to make sure this stuff works. And I haven't seen a whole lot of evidence that it does find the most qualified people and it doesn't have bias. In fact, I found a lot of evidence of bias, and that worries me.
So how many providers are there of these? Is it a program that a company buys that uses these algorithms? How many suppliers are they? Who designs these things to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, there are some big companies that maybe most of your listeners have heard too. If you check for your benefits at work, you probably encounter like maybe Workday or SAP SuccessFactors or other companies that sort of have these big that supply other organizations or companies with sort of benefit software. But in a lot of these big sort of software programs are now AI built in. So if you have candidate screening, you know, it used to be called applicant tracking systems, and it used to be a glorified spreadsheet where you check, okay, this person has applied, have they been interviewed, have they been rejected? And today, all these tools can use AI. I do not know which company turns on the AI or turns it off. We don't know that, but we know that the capabilities are built in there. And I usually go to HR Tech in Las Vegas every fall, and there are like 10,000 people and hundreds of companies that supply these tools. Some big ones, some really small ones, some you may have never heard of, and some that are sort of big behemoths in HR technology. So it really runs the gamut.
Right, let me take a break. We come back. We'll talk about how prevalent this is and how likely is it that somebody that applied for a job recently actually was either their resume was screened by AI, and then I want to talk about the interview process as well. Hilka Shellman's our guest, journalism professor at NYU, author of the book The Algorithm, How AI Decides Who Gets Hired, Monitored, Promoted, and Fired, and Why We Need to Fight Back Now. New York Times has called it but one of the best five books on AI to read now. We'll be back. If you have any questions, comments, open our Jeweler Talk and text lines open, 504-260-1870. At one point, I would think in a spy versus spy game that somebody's going to create a resume program that's going to defeat the AI, but maybe not. We'll see when we come back. 923 WWL. Very interesting and kind of scary hour with Hilka Shellman, journalism professor at NYU, and the author of the book The Algorithm, How AI Decides Who Gets Hired, Monitored, Promoted, and Fired, and Why We Need to Fight Back Now. I'm getting some text, Hilka, from people. This book is available at all the usual outlets and so forth?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere you're looking for the book. It's totally available. And it also has, like, I didn't write it necessarily for job seekers, but while I was researching, I learned a couple of things, how job seekers today can sort of AI-proof a little bit their resume. So there is a little bit at the end, a couple of pages, what you can do to, like, have a machine-readable resume, for example.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering, because it would seem like, and I said that before the break, in terms of action and reaction, that at some point somebody would come out with an algorithm or something that would defeat the algorithm that they were trying to overcome when
totally.
It comes.
And that already exists, Tommy. There are actually AI tools that automatically now apply for candidates and sort of do these, like, what they call knockout questions, like, can you work on the weekends? Like, it will answer those. Like, we had companies complain that avatars, like digital mashups of a candidate, would come to the video job interview, that there wasn't actually a real person in front of the camera. Like, there's all kinds of things happening in this world. So, like, a lot of people joke it's like AI versus AI. So it's kind of interesting. Like, the question is, like, who's making these hiring decisions? Like, we do see at the end, though. So I think what might be easy to visualize is, like, we see AI being used in the beginning of hiring when there's a lot of rejection. Mm-hmm. When you have, like, 10 or 15 or whatever, a small number of candidates at the end, and you ask them to come in for a job interview, there's still people who do the final decision in the hiring, right? Like, when you get to the yes, that's when people get involved.
So how likely is it, you know, we got a lot of newly minted college graduates, how likely is it that somebody listening right now who either themselves or their son or daughter, granddaughter, grandson applied for a job, that their resume was scanned by one of these AI robots?
Algorithms? Yeah.
Algorithms.
Yeah, totally. Very likely. So if you submit today, if you submit your resume and your cover letter to, like, LinkedIn, Indeed, any of those job platforms, mm-hmm. they all use AI. What they use exactly, we don't know, but we know that they use AI. All the large companies use AI. And then, you know, it's pretty prevalent in, like, if you apply for a fast job in fast food or with a big retailer, like, some of these companies hire literally thousands of people a month. So they have, like, a sort of digital algorithmic pipeline built out. Also in banking, it's very prevalent, investment banking. But if you apply to a small nonprofit with, like, 3 employees, I mean, you know, maybe an arts nonprofit, they still read all your resumes, right? So it sort of really depends. The larger the organization, the more likely. It's sort of a good rule of thumb.
I know we've spoken to HR people already, and they talk about what to put on a resume, what not to put on a resume. So there already are keywords, right, and things you should do, things you should not do. Does that differ greatly with an algorithm as opposed to somebody who reads the resume?
I would say yes. So it used to be, like, people would say, like, you know, stand out, have 2 columns, like, none of that. That thing has to be machine readable. And you want to make sure, a lot of companies, and I think that is a good thing, a good development, a lot of companies want to look more, instead of looking where you went to college or where you went to school, they want to look at skills. Like, do you have these skills that we need? So it's really important that you put all the skills that you have, including soft skills, on your resume. Maybe even put them in a separate section so that an algorithm can easily detect that section. And then I think if you have some algorithms work, they're very sort of basic, where you feed the algorithm a job description and the resumes and say, like, which are the people that are more qualified. So it's really important that you match the keywords in the job description on your resume. Don't be cute and use, you know, a synonym or something. Mm-hmm. Some algorithms are not that smart. So I would do that. And there are actually a couple of AI tools online where you can put in your job description and your resume, and it tells you how much overlap there is. You want to hit for, like, 80, 90% overlap, not 100%, because a lot of algorithms then throw you out because they think you just copied the job description. So high overlap, but not 100%. Also, like, short, crisp sentences, anything that's quantifiable. You didn't save your company money. You saved $5 million. Mm-hmm. That is quantifiable, and algorithms can sort of ingest that, right? Like, those are some of the sort of the bigger things that I think are really important to think through.
Is this like entry level stuff only, or is this as people move up into higher level positions, either within their own company or just moving from other companies?
I mean, you see it most prevalent in like entry level, where you often have the most job applicants, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think a lot of hiring managers told me, even with, you know, they get so many people who just graduated from college, right? And they all look so great. They have this wonderful bachelor's degree, but they don't have a long work history. What do I know who's more qualified than the other person, right? So we see a lot of algorithms being used there, but I've also seen it, like Atlanta Public School has used this, at least in the past, has used AI capabilities with humans together to hire people. We've seen airlines use it for flight attendants. You know, we've seen a lot of coding assessments for software developers. So it is creeping up into white-collar jobs, but it's mostly prevalent in entry-level retail jobs.
You had to have done a ton of research to write this book, and I'm just wondering, was there anything that really surprised you, either in a good way or a bad way?
Yeah. I mean, what surprised me is, like, how prevalent it is, and then, you know, I'm not a software programmer. I can't code anything. So when I tested these tools, you know, it was kind of interesting how quickly I could quote unquote break them, and that really did worry me.
So go into that a little bit. Like, what do you mean break them?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so like, I mean, break them in a way that, you know, I was always worried when you have these one-way video interviews, right? There's no one on the other side. You get these pre-recorded questions, and what the tool does, it doesn't take the recording of the interview. It transcribes them into text and then does the prediction based on the text. So the question is, like, does the AI tools work for everyone the same? Like, with people like me who have an accent, people who have a speech disability, right? So I was like, oh, I'm going to try this out. I got, you know, like these logins for these one-way video and audio interviews. And I didn't want to fake a speech disability. So I just was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to speak in German. That's my first language. And for sure, I would get an error message, right? Because all the AI developer companies told me, well, if the tool, quote unquote, can't understand you, you would get an error message. So I spoke to it in German. And lo and behold, I got like a 73% match for the job, even though I got the transcription. It is total gibberish. It like makes no sense whatsoever. You know, in another job interview, I just said the phrase, I love teamwork, probably 50 times. I still got a super high prediction to be successful. I was like, I didn't answer your questions. Like, you know, these tools, like, that worries me, right? Like, if you can, like, sort of quote-unquote break it that easily with these, like, stupid tests, that means that these tools are very basic, and I'm not sure if the developers and the companies that use them actually know how they're being used, and that could be really troubling. So, you know, that is very worrisome to me.
So I've been here 32 years with this company in one variation or the other, so it's been a while since I've been on a job interview. Tell me about this this one-way job interview for people that don't understand it, because I'm getting some text about that. They don't quite understand what you're talking about, Hilke.
Yeah. So, and I think this is also a generational thing. Like, all of my students, if I say the name HireVue, all hands go up. They know this is like the dominant player in the industry. So
HireVue,
one-way job interview.
HireVue is
one of the dominant companies there. So what happens is, like, you apply for a job and you get a link, and they're like, hey, do this one-way video or audio interview. So you get a link, you click on it, and you're not on a Zoom call. So there's no other person on the other side. You just get a little video clip saying, hey, I'm the representative of Company A. Thank you so much for applying. We have a couple of questions for you. You know, like, why do you want this job? And then you get 2 minutes to think about it. Mm-hmm. And then you have to speak into the camera, into the little green light, and the tool records you answering. And then you get the next question. Sometimes it's like a little writing sample. You have to say something. So there's no one on the other side. You're basically sort of doing a video presentation by yourself in a room. And it's like really weird to so many people I've talked to, because they're like, well, there's no one on the other side. I'm trying to be sort of excited in my little cubby, and I don't know how to answer this. I can't ask any questions, right? Like, you can't ask any questions of the company. And then what happens on the other side, you know, once you're done answering the questions, the video is sent to the company, and either an AI tool will analyze it And that's, I did hear from some companies who, like, bless their hearts, some hiring managers watch all these videos and score them and rank people. So those, and they're pretty prevalent, those one-way video interviews in the industry. It makes life easier for hiring managers, right? And we see HR is often, you know, a cost center. They don't make any money. They cost money to a company. So a lot of companies want to automate things and feel like, you know, like job interviews, we always ask the same questions to the candidates. Like, why do we have to have humans involved? Like, just let the machines do the interviewing, and then we take it to the next step.
You know, it cracks me up, Hilka, is AI or not, and no matter who it is, it's like, well, you know, what are your goals? What do you want? What are you this? You know what I want? I want to be able to feed my family. I want a job where I'm not miserable. I want to be able to feed my family. I want to be able to go on a vacation every now and then and not starve and not have to worry about a job. Isn't that pretty much what everybody wants? But you can't say that,
yeah.
Can you? But you can't say that, can you?
No, you can't say that. Like, you know, companies want you to be invested. They want you to be interested in their particular job, right? And I don't know. It's like you know, the interesting thing with, like, one-way video interviews, like, is, like, I've even, like, haven't been in front of the camera. I use AI to deepfake my voice, and I still got through. Like, the tool never recognized that there was no human in front of it. So, you know, again, we're back at this, like, AI versus AI race, and everyone is sort of trying to win the rat race. So we have a lot of work to do for HR to make hiring better, make the experience better, make sure it is without bias. It does work. And I think, you know, what I'm sadly not seeing, like, when you look at the research, and this will surprise no one, is like the best way to hire people is have them do the job. Not ask them to describe how they behave on a job. Some people are really good at describing, but you have to have them do the job. Mm. So it's not very good for companies to hire 100 people and lay 99 off at the end of the month, right? That isn't feasible. But I do wonder sometimes, like, can't we have, like, sort of virtual reality assessments that actually ask you to do parts of the job mm-hmm. and assess you in that? Because I think then you as a candidate would also get a sense of what are they asking you to do in this job? And the company gets to assess you, and we see very little innovation there. And I think that would be very fruitful instead of having these tools that ask you to talk. You know, a lot of people are very good about talking about it, being a team worker, but as we all probably know, I have people that are not so great team workers in jobs, right? So there's a huge difference between talking about it and doing it. So the more doing we can do, the better.
It seems like sometimes the people in an interview the best are the least worthy to do the job, and that's because they're interviewing constantly, because after they get the job, they can't hold it, and they have to go on another interview, as opposed to the people who hold the job for a long time, they're not so good at interviews. I appreciate your time and your efforts, Hilka. Very interesting conversation. Hope you can come back. Hilka Shellman, the name of the book is The Algorithm, How AI Decides Who Gets Hired, Monitored, Promoted, and Fired, and Why We Need to Fight Back Now. She's a journalism professor at NYU, and it was nice to hear somebody agree with me that the person that's being interviewed and the person that is doing the interviewing both have the same goal, which is, I just want a job where I can make enough money, where I'm not miserable, where it's a good working condition, I can make enough money to provide for myself and my family and take an occasional vacation and get along with the people I work with. Because when you cut all the other crap out, that's what it comes down to. Am I wrong? 9:42, we'll take a break for traffic now, WWL. Still 9:49 here at WWL. Trip Rabelais joins us, director of Lafreniere Park. Trip and I go back a long way. How you doing, big guy?
Longer than either of us want to admit.
I'm telling you, man, a long, long, long time to the Beach Boys at Boomtown and everything else, right?
Yes, sir. It's been a long time coming, and surprisingly, we're both still doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm here promoting another Uncle Sam Jam.
There you go, and nothing's changed. Nobody's aged. Tell me about Uncle Sam Jam today at Lafreniere Park, Trip.
Gates open at 3. Marine Band starts at 4. We've got Don McLean, Shenandoah, Bottomland, Peyton Smith. We've got a huge, huge fireworks show at 9 o'clock. Man, it's a family event. It's family friendly. Bring your chair. Bring your blanket. Come out to the meadow. The grass looks great. Everybody's happy. And, you know, I think the best part is I think we're going to avoid the rain this year, which will be wonderful.
Is it a ticketed event, Trip?
No. You can pay for a parking spot inside the park, or you can pay for VIP passes. But if you just want to park and walk in for free, You can do that, and we offer free parking at the Shrine on Airline with a shuttle to the park.
And you're going to have some stuff to eat and drink out there, I would think, right?
Oh, you know us. We're going to have a little food and drink out here. We've got daiquiris, I know, is here for sure. We've got Cajun food. We've got Cayenne seafood. We got Boudin. We're going down the list. Messina's Catering. Squeaky Street Fresh Fruit. I mean, we got tons of stuff out here. And, of course, we have snowballs for everybody as well.
And you can bring your lawn chairs with no ice chest, right?
No ice chest. We ask you to support the vendors that have been generous enough to come in here and support us. And, yeah, bring your lawn chair, bring your blanket. We also ask that you don't bring any 10x10s because that blocks other people's views.
That's a tent?
But, look, come on. Yeah, 10x10 tent. If you insist on it, we're going to put you in the back. But, we just want everybody to come have a good time. And it's a family event. This is the 30th year, believe it or not, Tommy. That's almost as long as you and I have been friends.
Almost. Tell me about the fireworks show that you got.
So the fireworks, we actually will have more fireworks than we've ever had. And we're doing it in 15 minutes. So it's going to be a very intense fireworks show in 15 minutes. Mm. Don't quote me, but I think we're getting about 30 minutes of fireworks in 15 minutes. So it's going to be intense. It's going to be beautiful. I think the fireworks companies have all stepped up and said, this time we're going to blow everybody's eyes off. So hopefully everybody has a good time.
So the artists appear in what order? It starts with the Marine Forces Reserve Band?
Yes, the Marine Forces Reserve Band is first. Then we go to Bottomland at 4:30. 6 o'clock is Don McLean. 7:30 is Shenandoah. 9 o'clock, we do the Victory Bells with the fireworks. Mm-hmm. And then at 9:20 for people as they're leaving, we've got Peyton Smith.
Don McLean's going to do Vincent or not? We were talking about that earlier. I sure hope he does. It's one of my favorite songs. You know that song or not by Don McLean?
Oh, yeah, but we don't ever get the set list. You know how that goes, Tommy.
Yeah, I mean,
we've been doing this a long time, you and I. But I would imagine that singing Bye Bye Miss American Pie together with, 10,000 of your friends in Lafayette Park's Meadow is going to be a sight.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing wrong. Bye Bye Miss American Pie, that's great, but I just love the song Vincent because Vincent Van Gogh's art speak to me. Give me a wrap-up here, Tripp, if you can take us out, please, because somebody texted in about ice chest, even though we just mentioned that, lawn chairs, parking, et cetera.
Parking is free at Zephyr Stadium, and you can be shuttled over. You can pay $20 to get a spot here. Gates open at 3. Entertainment starts at 4. Please come out, have a good time, bring your family, bring your grandma, bring your mom and them. We want everybody to come to Lafayette Park for yet another one of our family safe events here in Jefferson Parish.
And you got Uncle Sam Jam Jefferson.com's website. You got any VIP sponsorships left, or are they all gone?
I think you still have some VIP tickets you can buy today, which is $100, get you 4 armbands into the VIP section and a parking lot, but those are selling fast. I'm watching a computer, so make sure we get those. If you want them, go get them right now.
Uncle Sam Jam, Jefferson.com. Tripp, a pleasure, man. Good to talk to you again. Happy 4th of July. Y'all have a great time.
Thank you, my friend. Good talking to you.
You bet. 9:53, we'll take a break, find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back here on WWL.